Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about what worked for me, but also those epic fails that I've learned from. I talk to people who share their expertise. And all because I genuinely believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential, and that that's what they'll need in an unpredictable world. We are in the midst of a summer series called Low Tech Learning, and that might sound strange because I am an educational technology professor. I've written the AI roadmap. I wrote a book on distance learning. But I also wrote Vintage Innovation, and I also pushed for low-tech options in the book Launch and Empower. And even within a book like the AI Roadmap, I warned about things like techno-futurism. I genuinely think that there are some real advantages to taking a low-tech approach, and so that's what we're talking about this summer. And today, we're going to be talking about this idea of nature. So if we're going to be limiting technology in the classroom, what's a viable alternative? And I don't think it's desks and rows and kids doing worksheets the whole time. I think it's going to include time spent outdoors. And so that's what I want to talk about. We're going to actually in the future talk about the idea of outdoor learning. But for now, let's talk about this topic. And I'm going to begin with a story of a moment that I'll never forget. We gather outside on a worn-out blanket strewn over the hot cul-de-sac pavement. No handouts, no close reading exercise, just a bunch of families in the neighborhood breaking bread, eating bacon, and talking about life. Except the lone vegan in our group, she skipped out on the bacon. Totally fine. I respect that decision. The morning progresses with small talk and banter and impromptu games of catch. Occasionally, we put on our dark solar eclipse glasses and glance at the slight circle forming that's covering part of the sun. Eventually, the shadows change. The light grows dimmer as we make finger puppets that feel out of this world. And yet, it remains kind of uneventful. We're fascinated by the weird shadows, but that's about it. But then it starts feeling real. For the next few minutes, we watch as the world feels slightly sepia-toned. My wife and kids gather close as the countdown begins. And then all at once it happens. The stars appear and the temperature drops. Unreal. I stare out at the total eclipse, the bright white circle enveloping the sky. It's breathtaking. It's beautiful. I squeeze my wife's hand. We know we are witnessing something magical. But the real magic isn't just the eclipse. It's the look on our kids' faces, consumed with awe and wonder. A certain kind that can only occur when we are truly able to observe the beauty of our universe. Fast forward a decade later, we still talk about this very moment. My kids are adults, well, almost adults. They're 21 and 19 and 16. But this day, this moment in watching the total eclipse is etched into our memory. It changed us. And I know that sounds a bit extreme, but it did. Our world is too compressed. We live in an increasingly virtual world with a barrage of text and moving images and noise at the click of a button. I can binge watch my favorite shows and instantly access my favorite music. And right now, I'm telling you, I have been listening today to the Brat album by Charlie XCX, Do Not Judge, and the Body Talk album yesterday with Robin, and it's all about the dance music in my brain right now. I can tap an icon and talk with friends all over the world, anytime, anywhere. We inhabit these virtual spaces, the abstract third space between two locations, without giving it much thought. What once felt magical is just normal. Instinctively, when I'm bored, I hop onto Instagram and I cruise the different reels. If I'm a passenger in a car, I nearly always pull my phone out and check to see if there's any Pokemon hanging out nearby. It's become so normal, it almost feels invisible. After a while, it can feel as if the whole world has been condensed into the palm of our hands. Case in point, over 2 years ago, I think it was just about 2 years ago, I watched this cringeworthy Apple commercial. And like many viewers, I had a visceral reaction to the message because it had created this false dichotomy between the digital and the physical, the technological and the human, the compressed and the expansive. Basically, they were showing how you could condense a grand piano and an art studio and a record player and all of this, and it was just being smashed and smashed and smashed and compressed into an iPad. I immediately sat down and sketched out a video, and then I used my trusty MacBook to turn it into a video. But I think about that a lot, that message from that commercial. Again, if you're not familiar, there's this house of colorful, vibrant, idiosyncratic objects that are crushed by a giant industrial machine. The iPad lives. It's so thin, so compressed, so sexy and skinny. It's also breakable, but we don't want to talk about that. Drop it down a set of stairs, you're going to get a spiderweb screen, but no, that's not the point of the commercial. The message here is clear. Why bother with the clunky, the human, the messy, the colorful, the vibrant? Just opt for an iPad. Why strum your fingers on an acoustic guitar, learning the chord progression to Stairway to Heaven, like your father did, and maybe your grandpa, when there's GarageBand? Why spend hours playing Space Invaders with your friends at the arcade if you have an app store? You can get it cheaper and faster. Why embrace the memory of emptying your spit valve in the marching band as you look up embarrassed at your crush staring back at you? If you could just stare at the likes of your latest social media update. It's so inefficient to hold on to the tangible in an age of automation. And I get it. I love technology. I've been using a Mac since my childhood. The Apple ecosystem is how I do a lot of my creative work, like making videos and making this podcast. I'm literally recording it on GarageBand right now and making books. And yet, I don't want more compression. Give me a can of spray paint so my son Micah and I can make art in the garage. Give me an acoustic guitar and see if I can play New Kid in Town the way my dad did and feel the memories of my dad singing that song while I fall asleep. Give me a whole truckload of hardback books covered with annotations that are passports to all kinds of worlds. Forget compression. I want duct tape. I want cardboard. Give me a makerspace full of random objects that can't be digitized. I want an acoustic guitar next to a campfire while we have another IPA, because life is short. We don't need to compress it any more than it already is. In a world of automation, I don't want to crush creativity. Now, of course, we should enjoy the tech. It's amazing, but also let's embrace the lo-fi. the vintage, the tangible, the messy, the human. I share this because I keep seeing the message that AI will spark all kinds of amazing innovations, but if we want to prepare students for an unpredictable world, I don't want them to be compressed. I want something expansive. And that something includes nature. We need nature more than ever. As school districts begin to embrace low-tech learning, I think we need to ask, what is the best alternative? It's easy to get nostalgic and jump toward desks and rows and students completing worksheets. But I actually think part of what we need to recover is our connection to the natural world. There's also a transformative element to nature that makes us more creative. If you ask some of the most innovative artists and engineers and entrepreneurs, you might be surprised how often they go hiking or take long walks. There's something powerful about slowing down and taking in the beauty of our universe. These moments actually increase divergent thinking and improve our ability to problem solve. And yet, the natural world can feel like a luxury for teachers. We inhabit a world of buzzing fluorescent lights and industrial carpet. We deal with incessant pressures of standardized tests and the push to make kids future ready. Gardens and nature can feel like, I don't know, hippity-dippity. Like, oh, that's a cute idea, but I have a curriculum map I need to follow. So I think before we get into how, let's talk about the advantages of nature. Number one, nature creates positive disruptions. Going out into nature will pull us from rhythm, the rhythm of the industrial life, and from the narrow algorithm-based worldview of our echo chambers. This morning I went hiking. I was suddenly whisked away from the cacophony of current events, the bad news going on, and the latest educational fads in my TikTok and Instagram. And I was suddenly immersed in the natural beauty of the Oregon forest. This, for me, had like a centering element, or maybe a decentering element, and I needed it. This was a positive disruption. Number two, nature encourages problem solving. Ever notice that some of your best ideas happen when you're taking a shower, sitting in a car, or going for a walk? Well, there's a reason for this. In the book Rest, the author explores how some of the greatest thinkers use long walks as a way to think deeply and seemingly unrelated ideas. For example, Charles Darwin went on long walks in the country, and that helped him solidify and understand his ideas of evolutionary theory. While we often think about this time as a luxury, this is actually a part of how we solve problems. We need extended time, and it doesn't have to be out in nature. You actually get a lot of the same benefits from being out in the city. But this uninterrupted time, nature can be one of the best ways to get there. Number three, nature helps us embrace deep work. There's an interesting research study from the University of Michigan. Students were asked to take long walks before engaging in a concentration activity. The first group went out to a wooded area, while the second group walked through a bustling city center. This is the part that I wanted to get into, that there is a difference. The first group not only scored better in a deep work activity, but their results continued a full week later. The bottom line, when we go out into nature, we are able to do better focused work later. And if we want students to regain the act of focus and sort of detox from their phones, nature's one of the best ways to do it. Number four, nature humbles us while also expanding our worldview. I think there's something about being in a place of awe and wonder that makes a huge difference in terms of our ability to see ourselves in a more humble way. It just has this humbling element. And I think when we have algorithms that are given to us, that are specialized, that give us exactly what we asked for, we can start thinking about ourselves as maybe more important than we are. And so there's something about that digital, that nature thing that pulls us away from the algorithm and helps us recognize, wait a second, there's more to life. And in a really good quality way, we see ourselves in a more humble way, and it actually helps us see ourselves more accurately. And I think it boosts our efficacy and self-esteem at the same time. So it's this sort of paradox at work. I have no scientific proof for this, but this has been my own experience. But also, nature makes us more creative. When you think about the future of space travel, you're probably not thinking of geckos, but yet, scientists at NASA study geckos to understand how to create better adhesives. That's a bizarre thing. So that's a small example, but it's part of a trend called biomimicry. It's sometimes called biomimetics is the term used as well. And if we want students to be more creative, there's a real value in having them engage in nature in a way that leads to better creative insights. So again, going back to creativity, this is the creative classroom as a podcast topic. Nature makes them more creative because of the ability to focus, problem solve, things like that. But also biomimicry itself, we will often copy what we see in the physical environment, and that leads to very creative solutions. So that's great. But how do we actually do it? I want to share 5 ways to make this a reality in school. Number one, create more access to natural spaces. If possible, find ways to get students outside more. We need to create green spaces that inspire students to observe and ask questions, but also relax and recenter themselves. In a digital world full of virtual reality and augmented reality and instant access to information, there's something about paying attention to the natural world that has real value. This might mean longer extended periods of outdoor learning, but it could also involve doing scavenger hunts outdoors when studying ecosystems. It could be a brain break where students go for a 10-minute walk before solving math equations. In other words, it doesn't always need to be a massive project or an extended expedition. It doesn't need to be big outdoor learning for it to be valuable. Is there benefit to outdoor learning in those big projects? Absolutely. But we can integrate it in small ways. Number two, let students play more often. The seemingly spontaneous questions about the natural world are often the result of deep, relaxed, unstructured time. In other words, they're the results of play. I've written before about the power of deliberate play, but this is different than deliberate play. This is the notion of unstructured play, where students are outside free of digital devices. So they might be wandering, they might be looking, they might be observing, looking at bugs, whatever, you know. It could be deeply collaborative and imaginative, but it could be a space of solitude. It might even be a fast-paced sport. And I think that this play, this unstructured play, is so vital given how structured so much of our students' lives have become. So this is the notion of letting them play. And I would actually argue adding some of this to middle school makes sense as well. I was actually part of a middle school that added recess to their schedule. We kept the same contract time, but we ended 15 minutes later on the school day. And then we had a block schedule that reduced passing time. So the net result was an afternoon recess of 20 minutes, which is actually a pretty long time. that might not sound like much, but it was huge. Teachers got a break, students got to play, and the net result was we actually had deeper learning and fewer disciplines in the late afternoon. Number three, help students learn how to observe. This is the idea of having moments where they observe nature, where they sketch it, where they think about it, where they focus on it, where they get a chance to observe. Because I think the act of observation is becoming more and more sparse in a digital world where we're fed things rather than observing them. And so there's something about that that's really important. Number four, integrate natural observations into the research process. So this is the idea of bringing in biomimicry into STEM projects. This is the idea of using it strategically. A few years ago, gosh, it was probably more than a few years ago, like maybe 7, 8 years ago, I worked with Chris Kessler of Kessler Science and AJ Giuliani on STEM projects. And one of my favorite ones was where students had to look at various bird beaks to come up with a solution for an engineering challenge. And I think that's the idea. It's this notion of integrating it into the research process. Number five, use the natural world as a starting place for open-ended design. When we first moved to Oregon, people said that all we would get was a light dusting of snow. But in the first December that we were there, the light dusting turned out to be a massive dump of snow. And my Phoenix-raised kids had never actually seen snow. They played with it. They built their own snowmen, snow women, and of course, snow unicorns, because unicorns, why not? At one point, my oldest son decided that he would create his, he would try to figure out what would melt snow the fastest. He tested out vinegar, oil, which is salad dressing, rubbing alcohol, shampoo, salt. I made sure that all of this was stuff that was safe to use. Nothing was mixed together. You get the idea. But this actually inspired him to create a de-icer for a car windshield. And I know that that's not an original idea, but it was groundbreaking to him. And this is a small example of how play in nature can often lead to curiosity. That curiosity leads to experimentation, and then that experimentation leads to creativity, which then makes us more playful in the end. Nature has a way of creating positive disruptions by pulling us out of our immediate interests and ideas and into something more humbling. And this is what happens when kids go into a forest or walk beside the beach, but it's also what happens when kids get to work in a garden. And as a teacher, you can ask questions like, what fascinates you or what makes you wonder? And you're tapping into curiosity, which is itself one of the deeper learning competencies. And students start to pay attention to how the world works. And over time, it inspires them to create something new. This approach has limitations. It's hard to incorporate into academic settings, but we can find small ways to bring it into what we do. Final thought. I would love to see more schools incorporate full outdoor learning experiences with wild green spaces that students can use. I would love to see courtyards with big gardens that fight against the industrial corporate aesthetic of school. And to be honest, it makes me sad that these elements are almost always luxuries found in private schools or the rare public magnet school. But I do think there are little ways we can bring in the natural world as we shift toward a more low-tech learning option. And these little things turn out to make a huge difference in the long run. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Also, don't forget to click the like button and subscribe. It's one of the best ways to find it. And then feel free to follow me on social media. It is always going to be at Spencer Education. That's true on TikTok. That's true on Facebook. That's true on Instagram. That might be true on, you know, Alta Vista. That's not true. Or GeoCities. Those are not around anymore. But what I want to say is thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.